Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, it's Weird Islanders, the podcast, back once again. My name is Dan. As always, with me is my friend Mike. What's going on tonight, Mike?
Not too much. I'm pretty excited about this one, as always. Always excited to talk about some Weird Islanders. This one, I think, is more of a left field kind of situation than we normally have. When we launched the show, everybody was waiting for the Wendell Clark episodes, or those are the Weird Islanders everybody knows and loves, and this one I think would not come across anyone's mind when they were making a list of Weird Islanders, and there's definitely a pretty good reason for it. And he also comes from a weirdly he's known for his time as on one of the Islanders bogey teams, a team that, I don't care what the record books say, the Islanders have never beaten in their 20-something year existence.
It definitely feels that way. And there is definitely a good reason why this player is not one that comes to mind immediately, but I'm super excited to talk about him, and I'm super excited to talk to our guest. He covers the Nashville Predators for A to Z Sports, and he's also a huge J.R.R. Tolkien fan, which is always great. We'll promise not to get into Lord of the Rings stuff here too, but he's an all-around great guy. Alex Doherty. Alex, what's going on?
Not much. How are y'all doing? Thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be here.
We are very well. We're excited to have you on. Before we get to tonight's Weird Islander and asking about some cool Predators history, Mike and I are going to want to know about a recent returnee to the Nashville area, a man who means a lot to both of us, Coach Barry Trotz. So my first question to you is, have you seen the coach around Nashville? And if so, is he just basically waiting for David Poile to give him a call and be like, hey, why don't you come work with me again in the front office? Because that's what sounds like everybody kind of thinks he wants, but you can never tell with old Barry. He plays things very close to the vest.
So I was told that he wasn't in Nashville, but then I've heard of people seeing him around. So I am honestly not sure where Barry is, but I will say this. People have asked me this question about, is Barry Trotz, is there going to be something happen with him and the Nashville Predators? Because, I mean, David Poile is not going to be here much longer. I'll say this. I don't think it'll happen with Poile as the GM, because that was the kind of the moment. When Trotz eventually left the team, it was a mutual parting, but it was basically a power struggle between him and Poile. And I just can't see Poile just being like, well, come on back. I think it's probably going to have to be, the new GM in charge, and then, or, maybe David Poile retires and then Barry Trotz takes that role. So I don't know, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
The Islanders, famously had general managers of all different walks of life, from a backup goaltender to
Madman, a lunatic.
We've had a backup goalie and a sociopath before Lou Lamoriello. I find it fascinating that David Poile has been he's it. The Nashville Predators general managerial history is one man. Do you find most of the fan base, I'll let you speak for the fan base here, a fan base that frankly we don't talk enough about because the paths just don't cross, except for, like I said, the Predators have never lost to the Islanders in their history. what is like the general kind of attitude about Poile? Is it like he's people are kind of tired of him? Is it that they revere him? I honestly have no idea.
It is weird. It's an interesting thing to observe in 2022 when coaches and GMs are fired like weekly, right? In all the sports, you just see, oh, another one's gone. It's just like it feels like it's all the time. Not necessarily just in hockey, but all across sports. And then you just look, and it's the same dude since 1997. It's like it is very strange. I would say that a lot of people in Nashville, I think there's kind of two camps. There are definitely those people who are like, get rid of him. He's not going to win a cup. And I honestly think that's kind of the minority. I think there's a lot of people who really, really appreciate the level of competitiveness that he's given the team over the 25 years. I mean, it's like, you know, they haven't won a cup or anything, but they've been in a ton of playoff series. I mean, there was a time where like they were just kind of expected to go to the playoffs every year. They've obviously had really good success. They won a President's Trophy. And I think there's a lot of people who are just like, I'm good with this level of competition. But then there's also the people who are like, and I think these are the smart people, like who are scared of what the alternative would be. And yeah. I think right. If you see, like, if you look around the league, people always want to bring up, they're like, well, you gotta tank to in order to really succeed. And David Poile doesn't ever want to do that. Well, like, there are a lot of teams who have tanked for a long time and not mm-hmm. had any success. Like, you can't just point at the Colorado Avalanche and say, look, yeah. they tanked and now they're winning cups and they're probably going to win another one. Well, there's a lot of other teams that don't do that. So
yeah.
the alternative is like, why would you want to risk it? I mean, like you could roll those dice and really go the other way quickly.
I always say whenever people bring that up, it's like, all right, well, we'll tank. And if you can guarantee me that this team will draft 3 or 4 Hall of Famers in the next couple of years, then sure, they'll be fine coming out of the other yeah. end of the rebuild. But it worked for Chicago and it worked for Pittsburgh, and that's about it. So, and again, they picked up multiple Hall of Famers in multiple years. I do find it, I would love to ask David Poile one time, like, how he feels every, like, Black Monday. It's always like a Black Monday in the NFL, in baseball. Like, you know, everybody gets fired at the very end of the season. He has survived 24 of those. As general manager of the one team, that's pretty impressive. If he's just like, oh, that guy's phone just got turned off. Oh, wow.
I mean, you think, like, he probably made his first, you know, trade, like, for the first, like, what, 6 years, his trades were via fax. Like,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't, I'm sure email was a thing in 1997. I was 7, but like, you know, he's shepherded this franchise through like 6 different NHLs. And that's incredible. And of course, you know, the Predators and Islanders have this great alliance with Cliff Ronning, because, you know, we both got to have Cliff, you know, grace our presence too. So
yes.
David got Cliff Weird there. Islanders, and was he an expansion? Was he an expansion pick or Cliff, or was he? Because I mean,
Cliff Ronning was, I believe he was an expansion pick. I can't remember exactly. He may have been a free agent, but I think he was an expansion pick.
We love him.
So yeah, it's a fascinating, you know, again, like Mike said, we don't really talk enough about the Predators, particularly on this show, because we only ever focus on the Islanders. But you know, it's good to get some new perspective. I will tell you this though, if you are looking for Barry Trotz, you need to check out the best coffee houses in the area, because the coach loves a good cup of coffee, and he was known to frequent many coffee places on the island. So that's the place to look for him.
That's good to know. So he was famous for going every day to this place called the Sub Stop in Nashville that has, you know, since he left in 2014. And I think the Sub Stop closed its doors in 2016. So maybe he'll never come back because that store is now closed. Oh, no. So
my God. They got to reopen to get the coach back. Know, it'll be like the bat signal, like they'll bring him back, open up, and he'll go there. But again,
I'm sure that Stub Stop is like a Kid Rock sports bar or something like now. So that's something awful.
Oh no. Well, now I'm very concerned about where Barry Trotz is going to get his sandwiches. But in the meantime, we have a Weird Islander to discuss. And you and I actually have a mutual friend, Dan Bradley, another Nashville guy, big Predators fan. He recommended that I talk to you because you have a wealth of knowledge about some strange players in Predators history. And when I offered you our list of Weird Islanders, you focused on a guy who may, in fact, be the weirdest Weird Islander of all. And we're going to talk about the many reasons why. So Without any more further ado, Alex Dougherty, would you please reveal the subject of tonight's episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast?
That would be Jean-Pierre Dumont, also known as J.P. Dumont.
J.P. Dumont, right winger, drafted in 1996. And I'm sure a lot of people who were around at that time are thinking to themselves, wait a minute, J.P. Dumont never played for the Islanders. You're right. But we're going to get to that in a little bit because we're going to start with his Predators tenure, which was by far the most successful of his entire career. But I'll bring it back to you. So what made Dumont? So there's actually a bunch of Predators on that list. Vladimir Orzag, Mike Dunham, Marek Zdlicki, a couple other guys. But you focused on Dumont. So what was it about Dumont that called your attention to all the weird Islanders / Predators on that list?
Just what separated him from the rest of the list, I think, was just the fact that I probably saw more of his games than any of them. And I think his history in Nashville is pretty important for a lot of reasons. I mean, so he was basically, I would consider him kind of like a rocket booster for the Predators offense, like mm-hmm. in that era. So he came over, he signed in 2006. The post-lockout sort of changes that really helped teams like Nashville. I'm not sure how they affected the Islanders, but they definitely helped teams like Nashville. Mm. Were why, you know, they could sign a guy like J.P. Dumont, because if you remember, he had a arbitration award, I guess, with Buffalo, and then they rejected it, and so he was free to sign. And like, there's no way Nashville could have gotten him at a reasonable price if they had didn't have that. And they signed him for like $2.25 million. He signs, and they also signed Jason Arnott at that time. Mm. So they're kind of like adding all these pieces in addition to signing Paul Kariya. But like, I think Dumont really was a rocket booster of the offense. Like, he was incredibly valuable in the offensive end. And I just to give you like context, like for the first nearly 10 years of the Nashville Predators, they were just like so poor in the offensive end. It's crazy. I mean, like the best season offensively was like, I think it was either, it might've been Cliff Ronning actually. Now I'm blanking. Maybe it was Krivokrazov. It was like Sergei Krivokrazov or Cliff Ronning. One of those guys had like a 20 goal season and people were like, wow, you can do that. This is great. And so like it was just, you know, they had no sense of like what an offensive team could really look like. And I think Dumont was a big reason, and we could talk more about this as we go, but he was a huge part of that like increase in offense. And I think one of the most important parts, of course, Paul Kariya was a big part of that too. That was Dumont's first year was Paul Kariya's second year in Nashville. So Paul Kariya had already kind of lit the place on fire with his you know, abilities in the offensive end, and then Dumont just like kind of added to it. But that's kind of why that's why I landed on him, because I just saw more of him, and he also was so impactful in one particular area that they needed. And then also like, and I'll talk about this later too, but he's also been like a really important figure in the Nashville hockey community, like overall. So we can touch on that later, but he was a great Predator. I mean, like I have almost no complaints about J.P. Dumont and his time in Nashville. He was just fun to watch.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people realize that that he had really good. He had 66 points the first year with 21 goals and 45 assists, and then 29 goals and 43 assists for 72 points the next year, and then 65 points a year after. His goals came down, but his assists came up. I mean, that's three really solid years for a dude playing for a team, like you said, that wasn't really known for its offense. That's pretty impressive. And the fact that he came over as a free agent must've been, I mean, incredible too. Cause I mean, Nashville at that time wasn't really known for signing. I remember the Kariya thing being like, he signed where? Like, it was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a novel thing back then to get for that team to get a free agent and for one to work out as well as Dumont did. That's pretty special. So I could see why he would kind of be imprinted on your memory like that.
And the team itself stood out. I mean, if you remember, you may not remember this, but the Predators were pushing for President's trophies those years. Like they were like at the top of their division, at the top of the conference, like for most of the year. They didn't win one, but they got really close. They still to this day, they had 51 wins his first year. They've not had any more, like, they've never had a season with more than 51 wins. Like, that was like their best year by wins.
Even the year they went to the final, they didn't have 51 wins. Wow. It's impressive.
Oh yeah. The year they went to the final, they were the 8 seed coming out of the West. So they kind of backed in there, but yeah. So that's part of it. And like within the context of the team, he was a playmaker, right? So obviously he was an assist guy, passing, you know, creating offense in the other end, but, you know, playing with guys like David Legwand, playing with Paul Kariya, Jason Arnott, remember Alexander Radulov, his rookie year. So he was coming up, Martin Erat. I mean, these are all like, all of these players, this is the biggest thing to me with JP Dumont. All of those guys had like kind of offensive increases in their offense increased with Dumont there. And I think he was a big part of that. And he was huge on the power play. I mean, he was like a big part of that. I think one thing about that I remember about JP Dumont the most is you expected points on the board. Like, and that just was not a thing prior to that, prior to the lockout, prior to Paul Kariya and Dumont and Steve Sullivan and Arnott getting there. You did not expect to walk out of there with more than a goal or two in a night. And when they were there, it was like, how many are they going to put up tonight? And that was a big change.
Across the line, drops it off Dumont. Dumont, the shot, he scores! He drilled it at 7:14, and the Predators retake the 2-goal lead.
Well, the Predators answer the power play goal by the youngster Penner, and a JP Dumont with his 10th goal of the season, Pete. And he reestablishes a 2-goal lead. And it's just sort of a harmless play coming in. He just tees it up. And he just flat out beats Rizgalov on this one, Pete. There's no big secret about it. No fancy play. No great stick handling or passing. Just a drop pass. He walks into it and just hammers it up and over the glove hand.
This Predators team you're kind of talking about a lot here, the 607, they kind of look in a weird way, and this may be a little foreign to you just because we talk about the 2006-2007 Islanders all the time. There's kind of some similarities here where the Predators have a few more homegrown players. I don't think the Islanders had more than two players they drafted or two skaters they drafted on that team, but then you look down the list and you're like, how on earth did this player end up in Nashville? I guess the term now is guys, and I guess Kariya is one. Dumont for sure is one, and then of course one of our other favorites, where the pass across was a big Joe Vasilchuk, the late big Joe Vasilchuk, I mean, the rest of this team too. It's like Peter Forsberg ends up in Nashville. That was, you talk about like when Paul Kariya signed, you're like, oh, wait a minute. The Nashville Predators have Paul Kariya and Peter Forsberg on a team. You're saying the Nashville Predators have these guys. It's a beautifully constructed roster from the standpoint of the names on it. You know, like you're telling me that they're an offensive juggernaut. I believe you. I take you for your word for it. But like just from looking at like a hockey reference page, this one definitely belongs up there with a lot of other ones that we like to refer to in Islander history, because there are just some beautiful, beautiful names here. I don't think Jared Smithson ever lost a faceoff. Steve Sullivan Steve Sullivan, don't know how many goals he has in his career, but I can tell you that he definitely has close to 100 against the Islanders. I remember distinctly in that season, I believe it was that season, because DiPietro was in goal, so it might have been pre-lockout. He scored a goal with like 3 minutes left in a third period in a tied game. The Islanders needed it, and Sullivan like beat DiPietro on a roof job. And I was like, this guy we play him twice a year, and he scores every game. And then you just don't think about the Predators again for like 6 months because you don't see him again.
No, you're absolutely right. There's so many guys. How about Vernon Fiddler? Fiddler's one that stands out.
Yeah.
Vernon Fiddler. And also there's some guys on here that are comeback guys that are like the guys that come back a few years later. They traded for Vernon Fiddler that cup year, 2016. And then Scott Hartnell came back and signed a year. Alexander Radulov after his Adventures in Russia that came back. Right. It was like it's almost like they had this one really fun year, and it really was a very fun year. Mm. The trade for Peter Forsberg still stands out as one of the most mind-blowing things that's ever happened in Nashville hockey history. Like, I remember being listening to the radio and hearing, I don't know if you guys remember the hockey insider person pseudonymed Eklund.
Eklund? Do
you
remember we know Eklund.
Oh, okay.
what was it like when you saw that Peter Forsberg was an E5?
Well, I don't know if I remember that, but I remember that he this person, whoever the Eklund is, I don't know if has he been revealed? Has Eklund been revealed yet? Or
I don't know, but he and I follow each other on Twitter, and it has been going on that for so long. I don't know how it happened, but no, I think his identity is still secret.
Eklund went on a radio station, was like, "I'm Eklund, and I'm reporting that Peter Forsberg is going to the Nashville Predators." And people were like, no, he's not. It's not happening. And then like later that night, it was confirmed. Wow. And I was like, Eklund, there's something with Eklund. I think this guy might be right.
we have a guy named Incarcerated Bob. I'm not even making that up. He's Incarcerated Bob.
Oh, yes.
And he's pretty much right on most of them. I was sitting on my couch when he said Matt Molson's getting traded to the Sabres. And I was like, oh, come on. And then it happened. And I never doubted him again. So there you go. But this was a crazy time in Predators history. And you know, this was, like you said, about 10 years after the formation of the team. So people still kind of finding their way with the team. I'm sure it's still gaining fans. And all of a sudden, boom, this team has 100 points, 90 points. And they're starting to, you know, pile up a lot of wins. And they had trouble getting out of the first round, though, a lot. But what was Dumont like as a playoff performer? I mean, you know, a playoff series loss is never like literally on one guy. Was he kind of one of the playoff performers, or was he kind of one of the guys who went cold once the postseason started?
I think he was okay. I think the playoffs for us, those two particular years, we matched up with San Jose very poorly. Like we lost to San Jose both times.
Yeah.
That was, it was just a terrible matchup. They were like a special teams juggernaut. Like they were like, they had the number one power play and the number one penalty kill. And like outside of that, they were okay, but they just were always getting power play chances and power play goals. And I think it was kind of like the Predators really couldn't get past them. I mean, Vokoun was like a pretty good goalie, and they didn't have quite enough. So, and both games, I think both series went six games, I think, but Dumont was pretty good. I don't remember him being particularly bad in the playoffs. I think it was just like they couldn't stop him. You know, it wasn't about the offense; it was more about the defense. I think
we remember Tomas Vokoun very well from the 2013 series. Yeah. He played with the Penguins, he's the only goalie who made a save in that series.
You won't believe it, but he was the difference in that one, in a series that included Evgeny Dabakov and Marc-Andre Fleury. It ends up being Tomas Vokoun.
Oh yeah,
at age 40 or something.
It was bad.
Predators Sharks, to me, like when I think back to OLN, Outdoor Life Network playoff series, I just close my eyes real tight and I think about, you know, the playoff series that's going on, because the Islanders are home, not playing in the playoffs. I can picture that series. Like I can just picture myself at like 8 p.m. Eastern time start, or, you know, 10 p.m. start when they're in San Jose. Like I can just see like Craig Rivet skating around, or who was the guy? Kyle MacLaren, you know, skating around in that series. And you can hear like Joe Beninati talk about how great the Nashville crowd is. You know, this is a hockey town. Like, you know, I'm sure that became pretty patronizing pretty quickly, in a similar fashion to like when the Coliseum was in one of its many last seasons ever. Everyone all of a sudden was like, wow, you know, like this place is the best. They don't make it like this anymore. We're like, yeah, no, we tried telling you that. And you guys just called it a dump for so long that we had to leave.
Right.
I mean, that is Predator Sharks is Nabokov on one end, Vokoun on the other end.
Yes.
Dan Ham, who's like those guys, like that is an Outdoor Life Network playoff series.
It's also frustrating because they had guys like Jonathan Chichu, who just had insane offensive years that are solely the benefit of the rule changes, and then just disappear into nothing. And then like, and it's just like, man, I wish we could play the Sharks now. I mean, like any time outside of that one, like 2005 through 2008 stretch where they were like insanely good. We might have had a chance, but I don't know. It is what it is. And I think that it's not like they would have really done anything after that. I think Nashville just overall in those years just wasn't good enough defensively. By the way, a young Shea Weber on those teams too. So
all right. Yeah,
young Shea Weber, Marek Zdlitsky, Kimo Timonen leading the way. But
Marek Zdlitsky, another.
Yeah, he's going to get an episode of this show at some point. Zdlitsky for sure. I promise you that. But yeah, no, that team was definitely of its time. And yeah, Mike is right. I could picture it. I think the Sharks, Predators, and Sabres, somebody else were always my kind of go-to OLN teams. But so JP Dumont spent 5 years in Nashville. He scored 93 goals. And 267 points in 388 games. Like, that's a lot. That's a lot of games. That's a lot of points. He had 8 game-winning goals in one season. 2007, 2008, he had 8 game-winning goals. I feel like there are seasons where the Islanders don't win 8 games, period. And this guy just won 8 of them on his own, which is really impressive. But he played 70 games in 2010, 2011. That was his last year with Nashville. He was 32. But his numbers were way down. He only had 10 goals and 9 assists. And then he went to go play in Switzerland. What was that? Like, was he hurt? Was he kind of, was he at the end of the contract, or what do you remember about that?
So he had, all right. So in 2008, that second year he was in Nashville, he signed like a 4-year extension and then it really started declining after about the second year of it. And, I think it was like some sort of a loan thing with SC Bern. Cause he went there during the lockout, right? So he, like so many other players, played over there during the lockout. And I guess I don't know the details of how the contract ended. I don't think it was a buyout or anything, but I think he just was like, I'm going to go to SC Bern and play over there for a while and then be done. But he has since come back, and I was going to mention this. Yeah. So he's like, along with a lot of other Predators players who come here or, you know, over the years realize that, you know, Nashville is a pretty cool place. This is his home now. He lives here. He was named the director of hockey operations for the junior Preds, the youth development team here in Nashville. And he's the coach of one of the teams, I think the 15U team. And he's also a coach of a local high school here. Like, he coaches a local private school. He's got 4 kids that all go to school in the area. He's just a really he's a big part of the team here. He just seems to have just made his new home here. And I think that that's important and something that maybe, you know, you might not mention if for other big teams. Like, I don't know if there's a lot of Islander players who just kind of make that area their home now. I mean, maybe there are, I'm sure there are, but
that's basically, they all do it now. Like, they've been together forever.
Okay.
You know, if you look at their roster, it's like, you know, from, now Barzell down to Matt Martin, it's just guys who've lived in the suburbs of Long Island. Like, we called them the other night, just like the uncles. They're all like uncles to each other's kids and stuff. And they've been here forever. But it's a running theme. It's a running theme on Long Island, and it's all about the schools.
Yeah,
good, good. Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah. And Nashville has some pretty good schools too. And I think it's particularly important for Nashville just because of the youth of the sport to the area. I mean, like, if you have guys like him, even when we were talking about Trotz earlier, like, it's really important for the hockey community to have someone, you know, a Canadian, first of all, and also like someone who knows the sport and knows what it takes to play it and knows, and is also someone that a lot of the people in the area were watching 15 years ago. That's pretty important for Nashville. And I think it's great that he's here. And so, yeah, I think the Dumont acquisition for Nashville was like as important as the Korea one, as Jason Arnott. And, you know, I mean, people just like JP. I mean, he's a great dude. He's easy to talk to. People really like him. You can talk to him after games. You can talk to him. At the place where I play, I play twice a week, and he coaches his team. And you'll see him just talking to fans after the game or after the practice or just chatting with people. He's just a really good dude.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, the Islanders have a lot of guys like that. Benoit Hogue is the first guy who comes to mind. I think he coaches the Junior Islanders, and he was big in the 90s. And, yeah, you could just see him. You walk into a restaurant, and there he is, and he's just lived there all his life. And obviously we've always had guys, the late Clark Gillies, Bob Nystrom. Like, you couldn't go to a game without seeing these guys. And then they become, like, kind of your friends. And you'd be like, Nye, and Bob Nystrom just waves at you. I don't know Bob Nystrom personally. I just know who he is. And he just waves because he's just such a cool dude. And he, like you said, they've made that area their home. Like, they meant so much to them, and they just love to stay. And it's awesome. And again, we don't talk enough about, you know, I mean, obviously nobody talks about the Islanders guys who stayed there. We always hear about the guys who are from Toronto and live in Toronto and make their home in Toronto and bleed blue and white, even though they never played for the Leafs at any point in their careers. Jason Spezza, but I don't know, I'm just kidding. He eventually did play for them, but we never hear about guys doing that for other teams. And like, they exist. Like, you know, like you said, this guy was signed as a free agent or contract dispute. And then he just stayed. And now he's coaching youth hockey players and hanging out with people after games. It's awesome. And we should hear more about that. It's great stuff.
Your mention of Bob Nystrom. I mean, we have to mention former Predator Eric Nystrom.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
His son. And he was born, I mean, this is no surprise, but he was born in the middle of the Islanders' fourth cup in the 80s, I think it was. Yeah. Either their third or their fourth. So, anyways. Yeah.
He is I wanted them to sign Eric Nystrom forever. I had a buddy of mine who went to Michigan, and Eric Nystrom played on the team there, and we kind of bonded a little bit, and I always wanted him to sign with the Islanders, and then I read an article once that said that Bob didn't want his son really to sign with the Islanders because there is no winning when you're Bob Nystrom's son and you're playing for the Islanders. You know, what are they going to do? Make him wear 23 and do the whole thing, like, make him grow a mustache and the whole thing. Like, it's not going to do it. So never worked out. But yeah, he had some pretty good years with the Preds. That's a great, that's a bonus weird player for everybody. There you go. That's awesome. but we need to get to the Islanders section of the program. And again, JP Dumont never played for the Islanders, but he was drafted by them, and he left in a fairly well-publicized tiff with the previously mentioned sociopathic general manager they had at the time. So he was drafted in the first round, third overall in the 96 draft. And I have an article here. I'm going to link to it from Lighthouse Hockey. Mark's great Lost Millbury files. These are all awesome. Every one of them was hilarious, and I revisit them from time to time. And it was basically down between Dumont, who had played well for Val d'Or of the QMJHL, or a guy named Alexander Volchkov, who was a Russian player. And there was a little bit of wonder if Volchkov would even play in the States, if he would come here. And so Mike Millbury, the general manager at the time, opted for JP Dumont. And now Dumont's numbers in the Q weren't really that great, but his last year, he exploded. And in fact, he had a great playoffs. And as was mentioned a million times in a million different Newsday articles at the time, he actually outscored. He broke Mario Lemieux's QMJHL playoff points record or something, which, you know, is the kind of thing that makes it seem like, oh, my God, this guy's really, really good. But, you know, year goes by, 2 years go by, 3 years go by, this dude isn't signed. And, of course, Millbury, a man who has never been able to keep his mouth shut ever at any point in his entire life, talks a lot about how, you know, they want this guy to be a certain thing, wants to do this, wants to do that, and doesn't know if he's going to sign. Well, he finally does sign. They get Dumont to sign on the dotted line, and then they immediately trade him and a fifth-round pick to the Chicago Blackhawks for some dude named Dmitry Nabokov. I don't think he's in relation to Evgeny much later on. This was a very, very poor trade, to say the least. Nabokov would only play 30 games for the Islanders, scored 4 goals, 9 assists, 13 points. Spent most of his time with AHL Lowell Lock Monsters. Get a Lowell Lock Monsters jersey at VintageIceHockey.com, I think. You should check that out, or a t-shirt at least. And then he went to the Russian Super League, which is just about the coolest name for a league I think I've ever heard. And was gone forever while JP Dumont he played a little bit with the Blackhawks, was eventually traded to the Sabres for Doug Gilmore, or with Doug Gilmore for Michael Groshek. That's a 2000 trade if I ever heard one. And then, as Alex mentioned before, he signed with the Predators later on. Was any of this at any point brought up at all during Dumont's Predators career? Like, why did the Islanders ever let this guy go? Like, what were they thinking? I mean, obviously Milbury was kind of gone by this point, but like, I don't know. Like, does this ever come up? Like, what were they thinking? I don't understand. Why not keep this guy? I mean, I doubt it, but just kind of curious.
I mean, Dan, I'm going to be honest. I didn't know any of this until you contacted me a couple weeks ago. So
this is what we live with here, Alex. This is our life. We know this stuff.
No, I for as far as I knew, JP Dumont just came up with Buffalo and was just playing there for a while, and then the then they did let him go, and just Nashville swooped him up. That's all I knew. I only knew him as a Buffalo Sabre and as a as a Nashville Predator.
Wow,
it's there's I don't know how many players. You could definitely fill a whole roster of guys who Mike Milbury traded away from, and we're talking about promising players who had a probably had to deal with some like mental demons from the way they were treated by the Islanders' sociopathic general manager that we keep bringing up. You know, from guys like Tommy Salo down to you know, Chara. Yeah. Like these are players. So there will be a time, you know, because we can tell that you're one of us. You're one of us, where you'll, you know, you can just name guys and think about guys. And you'll click through some of their pages, and if you see, you know, New York Islanders draft pick between 1996 and 2003, and then notice that, oh, I don't think of that guy as an Islander, you can definitely get yourself down a very fun rabbit hole where you hear that Mike Milbury has either, you know, offended his family in an arbitration hearing, drove him to the airport to make sure that they traded him.
Doesn't like the cut of his jib, something along those lines.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then these guys, wouldn't you know, all have very successful NHL careers,
right?
For teams that are not the New York Islanders.
Is there like an all time Mike Milbury draft pick, like all star team, like? I'm just looking at it now, like Roberto Luongo. I didn't know that he was.
Yeah, Eric Brewer.
Yeah,
I mean,
he made the shrewd move of trading Roberto Luongo to make sure that he could draft Rick DiPietro first overall in a draft that included Marian Gaborik.
Now that is a name I remember. I do remember the Rick DiPietro only because it was like a huge deal with that contract, and I remember ESPN talking a lot about that contract. Yeah,
The fact that Luongo thanked the Islanders in his Hall of Fame speech a couple of weeks ago really just, that was the cherry on top of the perfect Islanders scenario. But all this happened. And I remember this kind of around this time and being like, man, this Dumont guy is really good, but like, is he ever going to play for the Islanders? And you know, he was a big dude. You know, this was when I first started hearing like, scoring numbers in the QMJHL don't mean anything. Everybody scores big in the queue. But then I was like, I don't know. They could use a guy who scores a lot of points. That's something the Islanders really don't have. And then when they traded him for this Nabokov, I was like, who? This was 1997. So there was no real internet. I mean, it was just very barely getting started. No Twitter or anything. You couldn't like, there was no, you know, Hockey Reference or Elite Prospects. You could look up, hey, what's going on? And the fact that Nabokov showed up and really didn't, you know, like distinguish himself in any way, shape or form, just, you know, kind of added to it. But at first, neither did Dumont. Like, he didn't really do much with the Blackhawks. He didn't really like make it seem like the Islanders got let one get away. I do find it funny, though, that Milbury said at the draft, like, we can't afford to mess it up. The burden is on us. Like, we need to make the right call. It sets us, if we don't make the right call, it sets us back a lot, 1 or 2 years. And then he, you know, traded the guy that he picked. That was, I guess, the wrong call. I don't even know what's going on. The best thing that Dumont really ever did for the Islanders had nothing to do with the Islanders. He scored a hat trick against the Rangers when he was playing for the Blackhawks. He didn't score a lot of goals for the Blackhawks, but he scored a hat trick against the Rangers. And so we appreciate that, JP. Thank you very much. So then he got traded to Buffalo. And that's where things started to turn around. Seasons of 23 goals, 22 goals, 20 goals. You know, kind of made himself a regular. And then by 27, again, he ended up in Nashville, where he really took off and really enjoyed it and made the most of it. So I guess it's safe to say the Islanders kind of did him a favor by letting him go and have the career that he did. And like you said, gave him a new home, gave him a place to live and a place that's really taken to him. I think that that's actually kind of a nice ending to a story that really still bothers me. I got to tell you, it really does bother me that these things have gotten away from the Islanders as often as they have. But what are you going to do? That's the way it is.
I wonder how he feels about the Islanders now. Like if he thinks that they did him a favor, or if he thinks of it like, well, if he's the kind of guy that's confident enough in his own abilities, like I could have done this anywhere. So it's not like it could have been in New York, could have been in Buffalo, could have been in Chicago, could have been in Nashville. But I was also going to mention, like, I think the one thing about Dumont that is important that I should probably say here is that, like, it wasn't just him. I mean, like they did a really good job building that roster. He's not a star, you know, put him on any roster, he's going to dominate. Like he really isn't that level of player, but like if you give him the right kind of players around him, that's going to make a difference. I mean, he played with like Arnott and Erat pretty much exclusively. And then like also played with Radulov, like really good, like offensive players. But, you know, I think that's a big part. Like, I remember there was one game I remember going to. Well, two games I remember specifically in Dumont's career. The first game of his career, he scored 39 seconds into his Nashville Predators career.
Wow.
It was opening night 2006. I probably should have led with this. That would have been a better
that's all right.
But 2006, opening night against Chicago. This is pre Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Chicago, by the way, but so not like not a real tough team. And they 39 seconds in, he goes out and scores a goal and people were like, oh my gosh, this is the new guy. And then the final score, we actually lost that game. It was 8-6. We lost the game 8-6. So again, we had problems with defense, but one thing I remember is and this gives you a little bit of context of like I said earlier about like Nashville just generally being tough offensively, like could never score goals. There was this promotion every night where if the Predators scored 4 goals, then everyone would get a taco from Taco Bell. Ooh. And I remember people started asking the ushers, do we still get the taco if we lose? Because they scored. They scored 6 goals and the Predators lost. And everyone was like, I can't believe they scored 6 goals and lost. Can you do, how is that possible? And then people were asking if they still get the taco if they lose. And I remember that specifically.
That's
and
amazing.
JP Dumont made that memory happen. The other one was, it was like around Christmas time that year. I remember going to this game too. It was against the Kings and, Dumont had like a crazy good night. Like he was like 2 goals and 2 assists. And the final was 7-0. Like they destroyed the Kings. And this was like kind of where people were like, oh, wait a minute, this team might actually be pretty good. And one just moment I remember in that game, this isn't really anything to do with Dumont, but Dan Cloutier got kicked out of the game for spearing Scott Hartnell.
Okay.
And I think that sticks out because Scott Hartnell and Jordan Tutu could go out and just like cause havoc. And then like JP Dumont could just skate around and score goals. And that was like a big part of that team makeup. So
that's cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, Islanders have had guys like that too, where, you know, Mick Fakoda and Ken Baumgartner would cause havoc, Darius Kasparaitis. And then guys like Ray Ferraro and Benoit Hogue would score goals. So it was kind of cool.
And I know we're getting towards the end here, but Alex, it would be remiss for me because he is one of my favorite players ever. To play for the Islanders, and another one that crossed paths with your Predators. I actually think he had to wear number 81 with you guys during his stint. He had played for another 11 teams besides the Predators. But what is it like in Nashville when the name Mike Sillinger is brought up to you guys?
So I would say kind of like just peak Barry Trotz. I mean, like, I think that's kind of like what Trotz would want in a player. Mm. I mean, like two-way guy, I guess if you could really call him a two-way guy. I don't remember a ton about his career. I mean, I don't think he played much in Nashville, but I would say like that's a big Barry Trotz name there.
Yeah.
Yeah. They signed him and Brendan Witt, I think, in the same Day, and they both, I guess they both were trade deadline acquisitions for you guys in that okay. season, the season, the next season.
That's right. Guess,
or the previous season. Yeah,
that's
06.
Right. Okay. They were needing a center. Yeah, that's right. I do remember that because they had Korea and they were like, well, we need another center. Well, how about Mike Sillinger? Okay.
And then was Witt with you guys when he went nuts and like climbed over the glass to get at somebody, or was he still with Washington? I mean, he was talk about sociopaths, but
I don't recall. Brendan Witt, I think, wasn't in Nashville very long, but maybe. I mean, he could have done that.
Sounds like him. Mike Sillinger has absolutely my favorite hockey reference page of all time because he has so many different jersey numbers with so many different teams and so many different colors and borders that it looks like a bingo board. Like you just want people to start calling out numbers so you can try and make a line across or down. It cracks me up. But yeah, Mike Sillinger.
Oh my gosh. I just pulled it up. Holy cow. That's crazy. That looks really awesome.
Like, this is not right. This is like computer code here. It's insane. I am going to though ask you about one other person though. And I mentioned this, somebody who is almost as old as Mike Sillinger, if I'm not mistaken, but he has been in Nashville for a very long time. And has had a huge impact on the Preds and their fan base. And I think a lot of people don't realize he was an Islander, and that is Terry Crisp. Terry Crisp was known as a hockey coach. He coached the Flames to the Stanley Cup one year, and he's been in Nashville forever as a commentator and an analyst. But I'm not sure a lot of people realize that Terry Crisp, when he was a player, he was an expansion Islander. Like we're talking, you know, 72, 73, way before any of us were watching hockey. And was actually involved in one of the most important trades in Islanders history. He was sent to Philadelphia for defenseman Jean Potvin, whose brother Dennis was going to be available as the first overall pick in the 73 draft. So if not for Terry Crisp being moved to Philly, they probably wouldn't have gotten Jean Potvin, and they probably wouldn't have gotten Dennis. And well, that's probably a stretch, but you get what I mean. But what has Terry Crisp meant to the Predators and their fan base? Because, I mean, he has been there forever, and like, I feel like it's not hyperbolic to say that he's probably taught most of the city and the state of Tennessee about hockey throughout that entire time. Is that crazy, or is that pretty much what's happened?
No, that is definitely not crazy. I would say Terry Crisp like completely changed the way that Nashvillians like understood hockey completely. I mean, honestly, it prior to the arrival of Terry Crisp and being on the color commentary and being just an overall just kind of personality in hockey or in Nashville, I don't think Nashville really knew what to do with hockey. Like, I don't think they really understood. Like, it was just kind of this other thing. But when he came in and kind of gave it this level of like color and energy and sort of he kind of allowed fans to watch hockey in the same way they watch football or baseball. Like, hey, this sport's pretty fun and we can kind of watch it the same way we watch football. It didn't have to be this complicated sport, and the rules are actually kind of simple, and there's a personality in this game that you kind of want to watch, and that he did that like nightly, and I think part of it is like I think people needed to see kind of their drinking buddy be a personality that could watch the game, and you know, like he was always on the broadcast kind of like allowing, I mean, this is sort of what color commentators do, but you know, if a guy makes a bonehead play, he would call it out. If there's a bad call by the official, he would kind of yell about it. If there's a weird decision by the coach, you know, he'd point it out. And that was something that I think a lot of people in Nashville didn't know you could do with hockey. They didn't think about the game that way. And so he definitely affected that tremendously.
That's awesome. And he's still there, right? He's still doing, he does radio now. Is that wrong? Is that right? Or
Does. He does some TV spots in the like the intermission stuff. He doesn't do real color commentary anymore. I think every now and then he'll jump in there and do something with Pete Weber, who also is a huge part of that team. Pete Weber that guy's brain is insane. I mean, I don't know anyone smarter than Pete Weber. So I cover the games for A to Z Sports, and there's like a media lounge or whatever with cookies and drinks and coffee and such. And every now and then you'll see Crispy in there, and I saw him on Saturday, and I asked him what kind of cookie he was eating, and I was trying to find out if it was an oatmeal raisin cookie or if it was a chocolate chip, and it was a curveball. It was a chocolate oatmeal.
An oatmeal cookie with chocolate chips in it.
Exactly. Yes.
Wow. That's an innovative. That's a cookie innovation. I'm not sure I saw coming. That's amazing. I was gonna guess oatmeal raisin. He seems like an oatmeal raisin guy. And listen, I like oatmeal raisin cookies too. But Terry Crisp seems like kind of an oatmeal raisin guy because he's 100 years old. But you know, I would say, you know, Butch right. Goring would probably, who's our guy. I don't know. Butch obviously hasn't sort of he's been on the Islanders broadcast forever. I'm not sure he really taught people the same way that Terry Crisp did. But I don't know. Butch looks to me like he doesn't really eat cookies. I don't know. Maybe I'd have to. We have to get some research in on that. We'll have to get some spies going at UBS Arena, see what kind of what Butch snacks on in between periods.
And I think Crispy, like, I mean, he definitely changed the way that I watched hockey. I mean, when I first started watching, I was kind of trying to understand this game in 1997, 98. I was 14 years old trying to understand what I was watching. And he would kind of break stuff down in the intermission or even during the game and talk about, now this pass right here that just when Erat made this pass right here, this was a terrible idea because look at where the defense is set up. This is not a good play. This is not a good pass. He should not have made this pass. And it's like, you didn't see that. We never really thought about it. Like, oh, there's order and structure to this game and there's decisions that matter. And it's not just total chaos everywhere.
Right. Yeah. It's not dudes with knives on their feet flying around all over the place with no idea. So yeah, that's pretty cool. No, that's really good. And again, just like Mike was talking about with David Poile earlier, like, It's very rare to see, you know, so many teams that we follow in every sport have been established for so long that it's very rare to kind of see a team, you know, from the beginning and move along into different phases and stuff like that. And to have a person who's been there that long really kind of gives you a perspective into, like, this is how this team got built. And the Predators have they're having a good season right now. They've got a fantastic fan base. We've seen that a lot. And I mean, you know, it seems like they're building the right way. And, you know, when they were, trust me, we were both rooting for the Predators a lot. When you play the Penguins in the Stanley Cup final, you get a lot of people rooting for you, and particularly Islanders fans and just about everybody else in the Metro. So it's interesting to see,
Yeah, I definitely remember that. And there were a lot of people rooting for the Predators.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, a lot of people in the Nashville Predators community were rooting for the Senators to win that game 7 because we knew if the Predators played the Senators, there was going to be a Stanley Cup in Nashville. Yeah. But since it was Pittsburgh, it was like, oh God, here we go. This is going to be impossible.
Yeah. We know we know very well what it's like to have your spring ruined by the Penguins. But we've ruined a few of theirs too. So what's good for the goose is good for the Penguins. So there you go. This has been so much fun, Alex. I'm glad you were able to come on with us and talk with us. This has been such an insightful look at a team that, again, we're just as guilty as anybody of not, you know, giving the Predators enough attention. But
yeah, we spend most of our time talking about the New York Islanders and then the Toronto Maple Leafs and the 87 writers for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, it's bad.
Which takes up too much time
It's down to 87. I thought it was over 100.
It feels like 100. It's 87.
Those I can only have access to 87 because the remaining ones have blocked me. It's a dwindling number every day.
Right.
But, yeah, where's the part of this podcast where you talk about how this affects the Toronto Maple Leafs?
we have another podcast called Islanders Anxiety, and I would say once it's a weekly show, and once a month we spend the last, and I'm not even kidding you, the last 20 minutes of the podcast kind of strolling around Leafs media sphere. I'm happy to send those clips to you every month or so. And
if you're not already privy to them, I highly recommend avoiding them because it's a sickness. We really need some help. But it's terrible.
It is, but it's nice. It's nice knowing other people who in a different time zone, who are aware and are able to poke fun as well. I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I have a problem, and you know, I should probably stop paying so much attention to the inner workings of the Toronto Maple Leafs media politics. But then we talk to someone from Nashville who can see through it too, and it does make me feel a little bit better, not just about myself, but just about the world at large.
We're a little bit insulated from it. I mean, it obviously isn't something that's. I mean, we get that in droves, but about college football, so it's like. if it's a Saturday in October, November, December, whatever, no one's not a lot of people are talking about the Nashville Predators, but you got to wait till like spring comes around for that to be a topic.
Yeah.
So I guess it's kind of the same thing. Like how does this, how does the current Nashville Predators lineup, you know, affect the Tennessee Vols? You know, that's kind of that's the translation right now. Yeah.
Well, I mean, nobody talks about the Islanders anywhere, Long Island or elsewhere. So it's, I could sympathize with you. I believe you, especially when the, you know, I mean, the Islanders, we've talked, they're like the ninth most popular team in the New York area, beating only the Devils and Nets, basically, and the Red Bulls. That's about it. So we definitely know where you're coming from. But yeah, your Tennessee Vols are our New York Yankees, Mets, Giants, Jets, and Knicks, basically. And but the good news is people only care about the Rangers when they make the second round of the playoffs. So. So we don't have to worry about them too much, but that's cool. I mean, if people out there are listening to this are looking for a great source for Predators news, where can everybody find you, where you're writing and where you are on social media?
Yeah. So I write for A to Z Sports. And so we have we cover a lot of different teams, as the name implies, and AtoZSports.com/Nashville Predators is where you'll find all my stuff along with a couple other guys that do stuff for us. I am on Twitter, at least for now, at AlexDoherty1.
Yeah.
I am just hanging on by a thread, seeing what happens, but I am there for now at AlexDoherty1. You can find me there. And,
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to put a link there and everybody should follow Alex for all their Predators news as well.
And by the way, I used to write for, on the forecheck. So that is how I know Dan Bradley. I used to write and, co-manage the site on the forecheck SB Nation site for the Predators. So
I love it. I read it all the time. I go back to Dirk's years on the forecheck where I read all the time.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Check it out. But definitely if you're looking for Predator stuff, read Alex at A to Z Sports, follow him on Twitter. I'll put a link to his page in the article for this. And thank you very much. This has been great. I mean, it's really very insightful. You know, we use this. We first started this podcast to like basically just talk with our friends for an hour about old Islanders, but we're trying to expand to other folks and meet other people and get other insight from different places. And this has been really great. I would love to get down to Nashville one day and check out a game and see what's going on down there. And hopefully you can get to UBS and see what's going on up here.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Yeah. I really enjoyed it as well.
This has been great. Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Find Mike and Twitter at The Big Lebowski with two E's. Read his work at Action Network during this completely insane World Cup that is turning him into a complete lunatic. Not because of work, but because of, some wagering that has been going on.
I'm just very generous with my donations.
He's been donating money.
They need it.
Yeah.
They need it.
They do. They do. They're struggling, huge soccer superpowers.
Won't someone please think of the sports books for once?
please give them all your attention. And read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you later. And until then, keep the Islanders weird. Bye-bye.